can always tweet us at 99.3 ESPN Radio. We might even tweet you back. This is Schiemann and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Ozzy, right? Is that Black Sabbath or Ozzy Alone?
Black Sabbath.
All right. Rick Church on the other side of the glass. I'm Pete Shepherd. Solo. Actually, Rick is with me. Not solo. Glad Rick's in. Chris is sick. Greg's on vacation. We're talking baseball for the first time in a long time because this time of year, I always like to get a feel for the diehards or the casual fans, and no matter what age you are, how you feeling about the game. And did you stay up to watch the Home Run Derby last night? Because the young kids that participated in the finals, and Pete Alonso and Vlad Guerrero Jr., are you inspired to watch more baseball? I know that's what Rob Manfred's going to shove down your throats. I hope it's the case. At least for the younger generation, the real youngins, the 12 to 18-year-olds, I think you're definitely losing that audience big time because the game is just too slow. Too many other things to do. Too many other things to invest your time and more so money in.
We got a text actually from Lone Duke fan about 45 minutes ago that I just wanted to respond to. But he said, so sick of people complaining about baseball. Baseball is fine the way it is.
No, it's not.
Wow. He says maybe a pitch clock, but what the hell is Manfred doing implementing a three-batter rule for relievers? Now, that is, when you start making abstract rules like that, I think it's silly.
I agree.
But not maybe a pitch clock. A pitch clock or your sport will probably,
pitch
die.
Pitch clock and a batter's box clock. Absolutely. There's no reason for it. There's no reason why they can't adopt a better plan. I keep hearing some of these coach type. I love what I coached Little League for 25. Okay, great. Good for you. It's not the same. I'm not talking about Little League. I'm talking about Major League Baseball. Okay? And it's become so departmentalized. It's like if you're lucky. In my day, in your day too, Rick, if you had an ERA of like 3.3, you sucked. You weren't good. That was not considered good. I know the game.
If a pitcher didn't go seven innings, it was a failure.
Oh my God! Yeah,
I mean, bullpens were nothing. There were no closers. I'm talking like in the 60s and 70s.
Well, I'm talking even 70s and early 80s and in most of the 80s.
When did saves become a stat? Not until the 80s?
Maybe right. Yeah, right around. I'd have to exactly look it up. But do you remember? Most pitchers went 7-8. Now, there were a lot more complete games and just because you threw more. And you talked to a lot of them. And we're going to get Louis Tion in here with my good friend Dan, his son, because he's wrote a tremendous book that he's on tour with right now. And in fact, he'll be at the All-Star game. He's already there. He's been on tour in the Northeast and the Midwest called Sons of Havana. Rick, it is fascinating to read. I'm about halfway through it, and I am blown away. Not only but what Louis went through, and he was one of my idols growing up as a kid, and but what his dad went through in Cuba and Mexico, his dad, Miguel or Michael, I believe, was an unbelievable pitcher. Unbelievable pitcher. And what Louis went through, and just to get from Cuba, he was there during the revolution with Castro, and then coming here to the United States, and the rest is history. The guy is an absolute legend. It's a damn shame he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's got every good his numbers, if not better than Catfish Hunter. He should be in, but that's another story. The man is tremendous, and I can't wait to have him here in studio. Dan promised me he'd bring him in once they get back. It might be in a couple of months once he gets back from his tour. But the fascinating thing about the book, Rick, and it's a first 30 pages, if I remember, there was a multi-Bill Gates type that was running the Mexican League back then because, super gazillionaire type. He was going to offer Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio I guess he did some ridiculous, exorbitant amount of money to leave Major League Baseball and go play there. And they turned it down. I'd never heard that before. Never heard it. But it goes to this whole fascinating thing about what they went through, and he was making his dad made 50 cents a game. I mean, it's just amazing. But
got a chance to meet both of them a couple of years ago. They're in the cigar business.
Yes, absolutely.
And of them, Louis Tiant and his son, did thing at the world famous cigar bar.
Yes.
Introducing a new cigar, and super great.
Yeah,
great
absolutely.
People. And passionate about cigars now.
Very passionate about cigars, but passionate about baseball, passionate about family, passionate about food. They're great people. And I knew Dan back in Boston a little bit, and now I've got to know him even more. We've hung out several times at Burn, and obviously World Greatest Cigar Bar and other places. Just a super guy. And his dad, if there was a picture of next to the word charming, it would be Louis Tiant. The guy has just got an incredible way about him, a charisma, a sense of humor.
And yet he was
tough for some to understand. He's got a very thick accent.
He was
that's the beauty of his charm, though.
Very intimidating on the mound.
To
remember that he had that quirky,
kind of
spin his whole body around.
But he would throw 153 pitches. But I don't want to go through like down old bastard radio down in the 70s. But now the game is so, if you can get through five innings, you're great. If you have an ERA of 3.6 or 7, which was my original point, that's very good. I understand in this day and age how, you have to move with the times. But there's no question the ball has juiced the last couple of years, and especially this year. There's no doubt about it. I agree with Verlander. The numbers are overwhelming. I went through some of them yesterday. I go through more of them, later in the show. But now you have a seventh-inning pitcher, an eighth-inning pitcher, a ninth-inning pitcher, a lefty specialist, righty specialist. It's become so departmentalized. And I do think it takes away for the average fan, and especially the younger generation. They don't care. They're not going to watch it. They're not going to sit there and watch all these pitching changes. 2.5 minutes every single time. And especially when you're talking about a game where only eight teams are really alive for the postseason. And it's not like basketball. Like if LeBron James is on a mediocre to bad team, you're probably going to watch. I mean, the NBA does a marvelous job of marketing. They're superstars. And they're more recognizable, obviously. Now, there's less players. I mean, there's 25-man rosters on every team. But you know what I'm talking about. The top five superstars in Major League Baseball, I'm telling you, the only one I would recognize is probably Aaron Judge. I mean, that the average fan would recognize. We would recognize some of them, but probably not all of them. I'd be lying if Bryce Harper, jogged by me on the street. I don't think I'd do a double take. But if Aaron Judge, jogged by me, I would know exactly who it is. But back in the 70s, I mean, when we collected baseball cards, Rick, and everything else, we knew everybody, knew every stat. We didn't have, you had to wait till the newspaper came out the next day to the stats, and you'd say, and sometimes you have to wait for the afternoon version of the paper to come out.
For the late games.
The late games on the West Coast, and now it's just everything is instantaneous, but I think it's great. I love Twitter. I love information that's instantaneous. I hate the fact that everybody has to try to be first all the time and get it. I'd rather be fourth and get it right than first and half-ass it. And none better example than what we saw with Kawhi Leonard. He's going to the Lakers. No, he's not going to the Lakers. He's going to Toronto. He's staying with Toronto. Clippers have no chance. Lakers have no chance. Knicks have no chance. Brooklyn has no chance. Toronto has no chance. No one has a chance. So I just stuck with he's going to the Clippers because what I've been saying for 3 months. And all these people that speak in absolutes, especially about a guy like that, who doesn't reveal, he plays his cards very close to the vest, doesn't reveal hardly anything to anybody. These people are like idiots. When Chris Broussard and Jalen Rose, people wanted to rip Paul Pierce for some of his prognostications after the Celtics won game one against Milwaukee. Fine. What Jalen Rose? No way is he going to the – no way he's going back to Toronto. This other Broussard, he's going to the Lakers. Yeah, just like everybody, chill. You're not getting a gold star from the teacher on your paper because you were first. And it's like two people I trust: Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN and Chris Hines from Yahoo. That's about it. Unless I see those two guys in the NBA release a story, I'm a little hesitant. And we'll keep an eye on this Russell Westbrook situation, which we will get into. But I do think the Justin Verlander stuff, and this bears repeating again, and I have a lot of other issues I'm going to get to today. But I still want your thoughts. And if you watched any or all of the Home Run Derby last night, and do you plan on watching the All-Star Game tonight? I mean, I just was so forward watching the All-Star Game because you're on summer vacation as a kid. It was a big deal. You loved it. That was like me and my friends, we'd all get together. That was a big deal to watch. And not just if your favorite players were in my case, you know, Red Sox. It didn't matter. You rooted for the American League. It was the one time you rooted for the Yankees. I mean, it was a brotherhood. You rooted for the American League.
There was a charm, Pete, because they didn't play each other during the regular season. It was the only chance you would ever get to see, you know, Nolan Ryan pitch to, George Brett.
Or Steve Carlton back then, or, you know, even Tommy John was with the Dodgers. And some of the great Tom Seaver, some of the great pitchers. That's right. You would only see a very few because back then you only had the NBC game of the week on Saturday. It was Joe Gaggiola and Tony Kubek. That's all you get. Monday Night Baseball also. Baseball for a few years on ABC.
I loved Monday Night Baseball.
Was almost as big as Monday Night Football. And you had Howard Cosell, Keith Jackson, both of those guys doing it. You had Jim Palmer in the booth as well. And it was a marquee matchup, and you didn't see. And back then, you didn't have every single game televised in every market. And even when I was in Boston growing up in the 70s and until Nesson came around, you'd probably get 110 maybe games out of 162. And there were some Red Sox-Yankees games that were not televised.
There would be a local station that had a contract to show like half the games.
Yeah.
And if you got them on your cable, you know.
Well, this is even before, even when Nessa came out, that's when all the games were available for $10. It was split between that and another local station, and I'm sure it was like that in most markets. Chicago, New York, they all had different. Once cable came out, it changed everything. And look, the same thing in the NBA. I mean, don't forget in the early '80s, the NBA finals were on tape delay.
Oh, I remember that.
Think about that.
I remember staying up till 10:30 night Central Time to watch Bill Walton and the Portland Trailblazers, who I loved in 1977.
Yeah. Absolutely. Awesome team. But, I mean, it went into the early 80s. I mean, Celtics-Rockets in 81. Bird Malone. No. Yeah, you're on tape delay. You're not starting until 9:10. You think about it. But this all stemmed from pitchers with 3.6 ERAs and are considered very good. You get standing ovations coming off the mound if you pitch five innings. It's unbelievable.
It's all about pitch count.
You never heard
the term pitch count?
No, and
back in the day,
you talk to most all time, and I'm talking about guys that pitch in the '60s, '70s, and '80s. They hate that term because most will tell you the problem is with today's major league pitchers is they don't throw enough. That's the problem. It's too structured. You need to throw, and it just doesn't happen anymore. But Verlander was asked recently about the baseballs. And he said it's a bleeping joke. Major League Baseball turning this game into a joke. This is his words, not mine. They own Rawlings up here saying it might be the way they center the pill. They own the bleeping company. If any other $40 billion company bought out a $400 million company and the product changed dramatically, it's not a guess as to what happened. We all know what happened. Manfred, the first time he came in, what'd he say? He said, we want more offense. All of a sudden, he comes in. The balls are juiced. It's not a coincidence. We're not idiots. Asked if he believed the balls were intentionally juiced by the league, Verlander said, quote, yes, 100%. They've been using juice balls in the Home Run Derby forever. They know how to do it. It's not a coincidence. I find it really hard to believe that MLB owns Rawlings and just coincidentally the balls become juiced. He went on Golic and Wingo the other day and said, we think what's been going on this year is attributable to the baseball. Our scientists have, this is Manfred telling Golic and Wingo this. Our scientists have been now studying the baseball more regularly, have told us that this year the baseball has a little less drag. It doesn't need to change very much in order to produce meaningful change in terms of the way the game is played on the field. We're trying to understand exactly why that happened, to build out a manufacturing process that gives us a little more control over what's going on. But you have to remember that our baseball is handmade product, and there's going to be variations year to year, and there's more, which I'll get to. But 239-337-3776, 239-337-3776. Back to the phones. Tiz in Fort Myers up next here with Sheeman and Shepherd with Pete today and Rick Church on 99.3 ESPN. Hey, Tiz.
Hey, Pete, Rick. How you guys doing today?
What's happening?
Not much, man. I just wanted to talk real quick about, you guys were talking about old baseball being on TV and stuff.
Yeah.
I grew up in New York, and I remember the Mets were always on Channel 9, and yep. the Yankees were always on 11. Channel 11.
Yep.
And it was just, you know, you got it regardless if you had cable or not. And I was wondering if any networks or any region still do that, you know, if it's not all just streamed through cable now.
It's a good question, Tiz. I'd have to look. I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays down here are on the regular
Sun Sports. Or Fox Sports South. Yes. So yeah, I don't think
the Marlins are on the same thing. They're on that.
I would highly doubt there's any market where a local TV station has a baseball. That would be pretty strange.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most. I'd say 99% of the games are on cable.
Yeah, that's what. I wouldn't wonder if that. I guess everybody has cable nowadays versus old days, but...
No, you'd be surprised,
Tiz. That was the way to grow the sport.
Tiz, you'd be surprised how many people that still don't have it or are not going to pay extra for the baseball. I'm not talking about baseball packet, but just extra sports stations.
Just extra sports in general. Yeah, you're right.
They won't, but it's interesting. Thanks, Tiz. Appreciate it. 239-337-3776. Sean in Port Charlotte up next here on Sheeman and Shepherd with Pete on 99.3 ESPN. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how's it going? I agree Good. With you on all the stuff earlier about the pitch count, time clock, and that, and batter staying in the box. That's all mandatory, got to be done. But here's what will really help baseball. Mm-hmm. They've definitely got to shorten the season, and here's my points on why. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball, I mean, NBA and the NHL, look, their seasons are 82 games long, and they figure it out in 82 games. And people actually get, towards the end of the 82-game seasons, are like, oh, okay, come on, let's get to the playoffs. They need to cut it 40 games. And it will not hurt them financially. And I'm going to tell you why, because here's why. They drop it 40 games. That's going to eliminate a lot of teams that end up having 40 games late in the season where they're out of it completely. And people are not interested in seeing them, for one thing. And with a shortened season to 120 games, which is 60 home, 60 and away, you're going to get more people turning out to those games, higher attendances in those games. And the season will be shorter, and the other bonus is your playoffs and World Series are over before you get any chance of any weird early wintry weather affecting games as well. But the revenue will stay the same because with the shortened season, they're going to get higher attendances, way higher in them early games, because there will be more urgency for the fans to want to go see them.
Well, I think you're onto something, Sean, but I'm not sure that as long as the revenue sharing is there and you get the same amount for the TV contracts, yeah, because – really, you know, some of the teams like Tampa Bay and Oakland that can't draw anybody unless certain teams are there, you know, TV money is off the chart, ridiculous, stupid. So they're going to get their money. I get it. I would like to see the season shortened also. But you know why, Sean? You know why it'll never happen? I think it's very slim. Because baseball records, unlike any other sport, are sacred. Go ahead.
One last point I want to get in for you right before you hang up. The other thing that's always driven me crazy about baseball, and I know a lot of people feel this way too, they're the only pro sport where if you look at the last, like, 20 World Series champions, they have an average of 78 losses. I know the season's incredible, twice as long as NBA and NHL, but it just seems something wrong about having a league champion with 78 or 80 or 79 or 84 losses. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I mean, if you have 78 losses, that means you won 9. Thanks for the call, Sean. 94 games. There have been exceptions. I mean, the Twins in
87.
The Twins in 87. I think we won 84 games. And people always forget. I always bring this up. People want to talk about the Miracle Mets that won in 69 when the Cubs choked. And that was a great team with Tom Seaver. And people forget Tug McGraw was on that team. Nolan Ryan was on that team. Just to name a few, an incredible Tommy Agatha. I mean, they had an unbelievable team. The 73 Mets finished 82-80, made it to the World Series before they lost to the A's. I mean, you think about that. That they were two games over 500 and made it to the World Series. I think they beat Cincinnati in the playoffs that year and went on. I mean, it happens a lot, but you look at the teams. I mean, the Red Sox last year won 118 games. I mean, you've had your Mariners. They won 114, couldn't make it out of the first round of the playoffs. You've had some teams that win over 100 games. But I also remember back in the day, the old American League East, when you had the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Cleveland Indians,
Orioles,
the Baltimore Orioles, and Toronto had just come in. And Cleveland always was mediocre to bad. Toronto was just getting started. But between the Red Sox, Milwaukee, Baltimore, and the Yankees, you could have fielded three all-star teams. From those five teams alone, three all-star teams. It was a ridiculous amount of talent. And 92 games wins wasn't nearly enough. You had to win 98 plus.
The Tigers were in ALEs too. Yeah,
yeah, the
right,
Tigers.
Yeah.
And the Tigers as well. So, I mean, it was unbelievable. When Alan Trammell first came up, and it was amazing. You had Paul Molitor, Cecil Cooper, with the Red Sox traded Ben Ogilvie to Milwaukee back then. I mean, that's how much talent was out there. That the Red Sox had to trade three all-stars to Milwaukee. And the Yankees were loaded. They had won, you know, they got to the World Series in 76, lost to the Reds, and they won back-to-back titles in 77 and 78. But that American League East division was absolutely loaded. And you had the big red machine, you know, in Cincinnati, one of the greatest baseball teams of all time, those 2 years, 75 and 76. So there was a lot. The game has just changed so much. Of course, players stayed. You know, the pre-agency with Curt Flood didn't start till 1973, but players stayed. Like, you knew everybody. You had your baseball cards. You traded baseball cards. You kept them in cellophane. You wanted to, you know, make money off of them. But you studied the game. You knew stats. You knew players on every single team. You knew your own roster by heart. Got upside, sideways, backwards, forwards. And it's just, I feel so bad that it's just that passion is not there anymore. And it's Major League Baseball's fault. I know there's a lot more things to distract now, and nobody can keep an attention span past, you know, 20 seconds, and I get all that. But I really feel badly for the younger generation today, especially the kids like 8, 9, 10 years old and the ones between 12 and 16 or 17 who just don't, not everybody, just don't have the passion that many of us had for the game. And it was different than any other sport. It just was. And it's because baseball records and the stats are sacred. They really are. And that's why I think the season, I mean, they did expand the season back in the day, we all know, to 162 games from, what, 144. But I don't think it's – I think we're a ways away from rather shrinking it. Let me see a call in before we get to our first guest of the day. Jim in Fort Myers, you're up next here with Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN. Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Good, Jim. What's happening?
Hello.
Yep, hello. Go ahead, you're on.
Hello.
Hello? Can you not hear me? Can you hear me, Jim?
I lost you.
You lost me? Did you hit mute? All right, Jim, call back. We're going to take a break anyway. Coming up next, we'll get back to baseball. We're going to switch gears a little bit. Despina Barton, lovely young lady, sports reporter out in Orlando, play-by-play broadcaster for Spectrum Sports 360 and Spectrum News 13. She's going to join me. Going to talk a little Central Florida sports, especially with Orlando Magic, maybe even touch on UCF as well. So we'll talk with Despina coming up next. Sheeman and Shepherd rolls on a Tuesday on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Facebook has turned into a platform where anyone can spew nonsense. Sounds like these guys. Like our Facebook page, 99.3 ESPN Radio. This is Sheeman and Shepherd.
Welcome back. It's Sheeman and Shepherd running along on a Tuesday. And once again, Rick Church killing it. Little REM. I got to tell you, you're becoming, you know, Chris isn't bad coming back in. Does a little more of annoying country music, which I hate. But you're right up there with the classic hits, my man Rick Church, other side of the glass. I've been abandoned this week. Chris got sick today. He's deathly ill. He's going on his tour of the world coming up over the next couple of weeks, leaving Saturday. He's got to get better. And he was hurting. And Craig's on vacation this week. So it's Pete Shepherd, Sheeman and Shepherd here on 99.3 ESPN. And we'll get back to the phones in just a little bit. But our first guest of the day, Lovely young lady from Central Florida, Despina Barton, is going to join us right now. Sports reporter, play-by-play broadcaster for Spectrum Sports 360 and Spectrum News 13. Despina, welcome. I'm surrounded by UCF people on all sides of this building, by the way. But welcome. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having one more and inviting me in.
Well, we'll get to the UCF football team in a second. I want just a couple of generic questions I want to ask you about them. But let's start with the Orlando Magic, the Southeast Division champs from last year. Which a lot of people forget that they finished 42-40. Let me just ask you a general question right now. With all the free agency and all the incredible how the NBA has just stolen the spotlight away from the west of the sports world with all the craziness that's going on, what's your overall thought about everything that's happened?
Well, I mean, at first, Pete, I really thought that Jeff Weltman, the president of basketball operations, was just blowing smoke, telling us what we wanted to hear about, wanting to keep Nikola Vucevic around, keep Terrence Ross. All the local media here were like, there's no way this happened. And what are they really working on? So a lot of us were a little dumbfounded that this was really what was in the works. I mean, re-signing Nikola Vucevic and Terrence Ross was key and critical, and they had a reintroductory press conference yesterday reiterating words like culture shift, continuity, familiarity. These are things that Jeff Weltman in the front office wanted to go with obviously re-signing these two guys. And I was pretty surprised. I'm happy about the move, right? You got on your winning path after 7 losing seasons. You got a playoff berth this last year. And honestly, this is what reinvigorated those guys to stick around, right? They're starting to believe in the system. Steve Clifford is around for another year. We're not going through the carousel of coaches for one summer, thank goodness. I like the moves. I like that Weltman is putting all his eggs in something he already knows, which, at this point, he can do, because Vucevic is, these two guys have definitely proven themselves.
I think it's a great point, especially about Vuce staying there. 4 years, $100 million. He probably could have, the way some of these athletes are, he probably had his pick of, could have gone a lot of other places and decided to stay. Like you said, likes head coach Steve Clifford. I think something special is being built in Orlando. They still might be, but they're a dangerous team right now. But Vooch is, why do I get the feeling he made the All-Star team last year? And can you imagine if the 76ers still had him? I wonder what they're thinking now since he left there. But this is an all-star. He's 7 feet. He's gigantic. He's a beast. He averages over 20 points a game and 12 boards and over a block shot a game. I mean, those guys are rare right now in the NBA, the true centers. And he's one of them.
Well, and I think, too, they asked him a couple years ago, and I think he saw the writing on the wall of developing an outside shot. So you're going to see Vooch step out deep into the wing and drill some pretty big shots. I mean, I know he's had some game winners inside the Amway Center from the three range. And so he's really worked to develop his game and continue, his efforts, not only as that one-sided down low big guy in the paint, but he's stepping out. And I think the Magic are liking stretching him out, right? It forces matchups that are making other teams uncomfortable. And he's got the leadership quality. I came in about the same time Vooch did with covering the team. Mm-hmm. And just his maturity this year, 3 years ago, he got married. He had his first child back in December. Things are rocking and rolling with him personally and professionally. And I know he wanted to stay. What was strange was at the back end of the season, when you're trying to play, all your cards or at least keep them to yourself with your management, we were kind of worried of which route he would go because teams were coming after him. Ultimately, he owned a restaurant here in town. He, him and his wife have set up shop here, and they've become a fabric of this community. Same thing with Terrence Ross when he talked about re-signing. Yeah, it was the playoffs, but he said taking his kid to school the other day, and the other parents are calling him the human torch. everyone's re-engaged here in Orlando, which is something we've been missing for 6 solid years.
Yeah, and what is it about Steve Clifford, his role in all of this and the trust factor, and what have you seen out of him that makes him special?
Well, I think you have to go back to Frank Vogel, right? Mm-hmm. We went through four or five different coaches in just a short period of time here in Orlando. You went through the rebuild. Vooch was one of the only players that made it out on the other side. Mm-hmm. But with Frank Vogel, what players didn't like is he didn't hold anybody accountable. So when you have young millionaires in a room with conflicting, you know, personalities and, you know, how to, you know, young men, we'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
And then holding people in the locker room to different standards. It didn't work well, didn't bode well. So something that the guys wanted were they wanted to be treated fairly. They wanted to be held accountable. They wanted someone that was going to ride them. And they did with Steve Clifford. He came in. And he's the guy that is a defensive-minded man. He has local ties here. He worked under Stan Van Gundy's staff. He knows how to win. And he was trusted, not within just the Magic community, the whole league. Mm-hmm. Steve Clifford was a get. And while he loses sleep, we know, he has never steered away from who he is, what he wants, and what he asks of these guys. And all that I've heard out of that locker room is respect. And once, you know, once that's gone, the team goes, you know, wayside. So Clifford commands the room, and there's good relationships right now in place.
Well, it's interesting you say about Frank Vogel. So I don't know how well you know him at all, but what an interesting situation. I may get the NBA package just to watch when Boogie Cousins and Rondo are on the floor with LeBron to see how he handles that. I mean, that's a heart attack waiting to happen any second. You know?
Well, so this is, I'm going to be really interested to watch. And I will stay up late night. My husband really enjoys Golden State games, even before, you know, everyone came to play and all the, you know, world championships followed. But I don't know. Here, I believe that the front office wasn't 100% sold on Vogel, so they didn't let him pull all the reins.
Yeah.
Also, what I heard within here in the inner circles here is Vogel was slow to make adjustments on the court. So where some coaches thrive in those timeout situations and the halftime breaks, Vogel wasn't able to communicate and make those adjustments on the fly, which obviously hindered the game. So I'm thinking that he's probably in a better environment now. He stayed here in Central Florida for the majority of last year. His kids still stayed in school around here. And, I mean, he's walking into an amazing opportunity, but also a pretty horrifying one. You see what LeBron James does to coaches. Ty Lue came in for 1 year, and he aged like 50 years.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a strange dynamic. I personally really enjoyed Frank Vogel and his time here in Orlando. Thought him and his family were wonderful people. But sometimes that just doesn't transcend to the court.
Absolutely. Well, like you see, you talk about in-game adjustment. You don't have to worry about that, Despina, because LeBron's going to do all that for him. We don't have to worry about that. And if he can't do it, he'll go ask Jason Kidd, who'll be the next head coach there. And, you know, who knows, maybe even after 25 games if things don't go great. Well, yeah, that's the problem I feel for Frank. I think he's going to be a lame duck coach in that situation. And the odds are already stacked against him. But who could turn down that contract? But, again, we're speaking with Despina Barton, pride of UCF, a sports reporter, play-by-play broadcaster for Spectrum Sports 360 and Spectrum News 13. Also today, they're going to Mo Bamba's not going to be able to play the rest of the summer league, going to hold him out, got some stress fracture, but not from his original injury, correct?
Yeah, so the reports are now they're going to hold him out for the rest of summer league action, which we didn't expect him to play a whole lot. We saw him in about 24 minutes in that first game. He had 15 points, 2 rebounds against San Antonio. He looked sluggish, right? He looked like a guy that hadn't played in 6 months because he hadn't. January 31st was the last time he played with that stress fracture. And the team is just taking precautionary measures here. They said that he has a little bit, you know, a pain. It's not in the same leg as a stress fracture, but they also don't want to push their limits here. So, I mean, this is kind of what we expected. He's going to be sore. I mean, if you and I didn't run up and down after 6 months, how can this other professional, you know, superstar do it and get banged around in the, you know, the game time, you know, up and down, and just how physical games can get.
Despina, I'm 52 years old. I get hurt in my sleep. I mean, that's how bad it is. If I turn over the wrong way, I pull a calf muscle. But I hear you. Hey, I wanted to switch gears real quick to the Central Florida Knights, if I could, and Josh Heupel. And,
you got to call him UCF, though.
I know. Of course, I got to call him UCF, but I'm not calling them national champions. I'm sorry. But I wanted to get this part out of the way because I've been very critical, and I feel badly for the players, and I feel badly for Josh about this. That I still got to wonder. You know, Danny White turning down that series with the Florida Gators. I'm so angry by it because I just don't think – and I know their schedule's tougher, and I know they're playing Stanford, and I understand it all. But for me, in my opinion, I don't think they should be – they're not in that position yet where they should be – where they should say no to anybody from the SEC, from Florida to Arkansas for a two-for-one. It's just a real personal – pet peeve of mine, but how do you feel about the whole situation, how Danny White has handled that aspect, especially that situation, you know, with the Gators, and then you see USF go out down the street and play, going to play Miami and Alabama coming up the next couple of years.
So that's what stings. I think Danny White was expecting the support from the American Athletic Conference and the teams right in that arena to kind of follow suit. Like, if we want to be considered as a Power 5 program, if we want to be in the same playground as these big honchos, like, we all need to take a stand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, USF laughed in their face mm-hmm. with that commitment. Do I think in hindsight the deal should have been made? Absolutely. Do I mm-hmm. think that Danny White probably regrets it? I do. Because
really?
We're not just talking about, this is a game 8 years down the line. You know, these guys program so far in advance, I would have taken anything that we possibly could get our hands on. I did hear that there should be coming down the, you know, the pipeline here, a couple of games with some Big Ten opponents. Those haven't been announced yet, you know, so mm-hmm. we're all still hanging around.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're missing our mark as far as momentum goes with that move to say no to University of Florida. And it could have been, you know, that big brother, little brother thing. Really wanted to shove it to us, but to eat mm-hmm. at the big, you know, big kids yep. table, like, you got to play by their rules.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way. I wasn't sure how we would feel that way because we have other people in this building that went to UCF who don't feel that way, and I get in arguments with them about it all the time. You know who they are. Let me ask just real quick before we let you go. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes. Quarterback situation, we all know with Mackenzie Milton and that and how bad that was. But, you know, Brandon Wimbush and was it Daryl Mack as well, I guess.
Daryl Mack Jr.
So how are the Knights? We'll get you on again next month right before the season starts. I can't wait. I'm so excited. Yeah. All the Florida teams, there's so much drama and all of it. But what do you, just on the quarterback situation, your thoughts going forward here this season?
All right. Well, so I haven't seen the team play since spring. So we get little sprinkles of video here or there on social media. Mm-hmm. They're obviously tight-lipped. Josh Heupel has a very tight-knit group of coaches. I mean, this is the same guy that says, let's go win and go 1-0 again today, which is kind of boring from the media perspective. I have nothing to work with on my show every night. But as far as the quarterback race, he's not going to let anybody know what exactly is happening. So from the spring game, my biggest takeaways were, wow, Brandon Wimbush is, you know, he needs to freshen up a little. He was a little rusty, but mm-hmm. he didn't know the playbook, so I gave him a pass. Daryl Mack Jr. looked like he didn't progress at all. He's just a guy that just facilitates the game. I don't think he's a playmaker yet. I think he can get there, but he's not there yet. A young guy you're going to want to learn his name is a true freshman, Dylan Gabriel. He came from the same high school mm-hmm. as Mackenzie Milton over in Hawaii. And the kids, you know, when kids start whispering around practice and, you know, you can just feel this energy, they're talking about Gabriel as a potential, like, their guy in the future. Mm-hmm. So he's got me the most excited. And this is just based off hearing what the kids are whispering about and getting as many nuggets as we can, you know, over at spring practice. He's a true freshman. He's not got the size. Daryl Mack has the size right now. And mm-hmm. Honestly, my projection is Daryl Mack will be your starter in the beginning of the season. Wimbush could potentially come in, split reps as soon as he gets that playbook down. You know, he's just trusted. He's your veteran guy. Mm-hmm. You get in sticky situations, Wimbush is going to get you out. Look for Dylan Gabriel to make a splash. And then a local kid here in downtown Orlando, Quadri Jones, is a Jones High School grad. He mm-hmm. threw that gunslinger last year on, you know, a surprise
Yes.
You know, catch and play. So he's got a big arm too, but it's just, it's all murky water right now.
Well, Despina, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And I know you got, you do like, what, 4 shows a day or something. You work, you're all over the place. So it's great to have you on. Definitely going to have you on again next month, right before college football starts, probably before Florida, Miami, and you'll have a better sense then of what's going on at UCF. And we'll break down, you can break it down for us. But just thanks so much, Despina. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. All the best.
All right. Thanks, Pete. Anytime.
Okay. Thank you. That's Despina Barton, UCF, proud of UCF, but sports reporter out in Orlando, play-by-play broadcaster as well for Spectrum Sports 360 and Spectrum News 13. Sheeman and Shepherd rolls on without Sheemer, without Chris. Rick Church in the house, though, as well. We're a little late. That's okay. What else is there? 239-337-3776. Welcome back. Take more of your phone calls. Next hour, Jay Jaffe at 4:30, Wikipedia at 4:45. The theme today is All-Star Games. Got a chance to win some Miracle tickets. It's all part of Sheeman and Shepherd on the Tuesday at 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Check out whatever ridiculous Twitter poll we're running at 99.3 ESPN Radio. Now it's Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN.
Church, you're killing it! Oh, it's one of the great Genesis underrated songs of all time. Abacab. I don't know what that means, but I've seen it live.
It's a actor's term. It stands for something like how they're supposed to take their cues.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's a acronym.
Did not know that. Seen this song live, though. What a great term. Phil Collins of Genesis. 239-337-3776. Quickly, let's get to Randy in Lehigh. Randy, you're up next on Sheeman and Shepherd with Pete. Hi, Randy.
Mr. Shepherd, welcome back.
Randy, thank you. Please call me Pete. Thank you. Please call me Pete.
All right. Two things for you real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
We're natural rivals when it comes to baseball. You're a Red Sox guy. I'm a Yankees guy.
Sure. Makes it fun.
Probably my second favorite Yankee ever. I'll go with Reggie first. Mm-hmm. I'll go with my second player, what I'm not going to reveal. Then it's your third. You're talking about, you know, baseball, the juice balls, and this and that, everything else. You ever think a guy like Henderson could have been on something?
Henderson, as in
Ricky Henderson.
Ricky Henderson. Randy, to be honest with you, I think most professional athletes are on something.
Okay.
I just think it may not be like, you know, Canseco with anabolic steroids and injecting himself every day sort of stuff. Could have been the clear and the cream, that kind of stuff, or a variation of that. None of that would surprise me, and I used to care about that stuff a lot more than I do now. But it is what it is. Everybody's taking something. And you ask all these athletes if they had to lose 5 to 10 years off their life to continue to play professionally for another 5 years, most of them would tell you yes. You know, that's
and there. Gotcha. And then real quick, the second one. Yeah. You being a guy from, you know, Massachusetts and moving down here, and I left New York when I was 8.
Yeah.
I used to be a Syracuse fan. I don't even care about them.
Oh.
How much of a culture shock was it for you when you got to Florida and you realized below Maryland, maybe Virginia, how crazy we are down here about Southern football?
No, here's the thing. Living in New England my whole life, I love college football. Loved it. And not just BC and Fluidy, way before that. I just love the game. I remember my dad, Randy, and this, I'm talking like 1978, 79 or something. He comes in, it's a rainy Saturday where I grew up in Rhode Island, and I'm watching like North Carolina and Duke or something in football, some obscure game that was on. He's like, "What are you doing?" I go, I just love the game. I followed very closely. I was always, and we vacationed on the East Coast, Randy, for many years in the early 70s. Until the late 80s, and I just adopted. I just loved the Miami Hurricanes for some reason back then. I don't hate Florida or Florida State or anything else. I root for them if they're not playing the Hurricanes. But I kind of adopted Florida as my, because we vacationed down here 3 times a year. But the Hurricanes were close to me before anybody started really rooting for them in the mid 70s. So I love the fact, Randy, that it's college football. I love the diversity, and I love the fact that down here I don't have to just talk about, unless, you know, that. Back where I was from, it's Patriots, Bruins, Red Sox, Celtics. And that's it. 99.9% of the time. So down here, what I love about it, and I know we have to talk about the Red Sox and Patriots and sometime because they're in first place and it's part of the playoff situation. But I love the diversity down here. I love the fact that we have the Big Ten contingency. I love the Florida fan contingency with all the sport, with all the football different teams, and not and besides out of Florida, the Georgia fans, Alabama fans. I love it. It's refreshing. I cannot tell you how much I enjoy working down here in this market. I absolutely love it, and I love the craziness, Randy. So who's your team?
I'll tell you. Well, you know, I went to Florida, so I root hard for them, and I don't think I root for anybody else. But I'll tell you, the longer I live down south, the more I think baseball is leaving me, and I'm sad to say it. My dad dragged me all over New York City. We went to Yankee Stadium, and I remember those memories even at 8 years old, but it's leaving me. So that's all I got, man.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks. Great call. You're not alone, unfortunately. That's the sad part. All right, 239-337-3776. 239-337-3776. 2 hours down, two more to go. Sheeman and Shepherd rolls on. Got some NFL news for you coming up next hour right here on the Sheeman and Shepherd Show at 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.